And it is time to bring in Dr. David Caputo and his days, of course, over at Pace, Emeritus Pace, political science professor in his day. We welcome in David. Sir, how are you? I hope all is well with you.
I'm fine, Jay. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, my friend. Lots happening. Let's get to it. The president arriving in the city yesterday, first address to the United Nations General Assembly. There have been a series of crises that have taken place foreign policy-wise. You have a rift with France now. Who would have thunk that, David, right? The oldest ally of our nation to pull its ambassador over a new alliance, strategic alliance with Australia and the UK. You got the fallout from the withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan. And Joe Biden arrives in New York yesterday. He will speak day one here. You got about 100 leaders present. Remember last year, virtual style, pandemic. Different deal here. How he is greeted and looked upon will be a fascinating dynamic in my estimation today, sir. What about you?
Yes, I think it will be interesting to see how he's looked upon, but I think more important is what is he going to say, and how does he try to put all of this into an appropriate context going forward. So I think this particular week, in terms of the UN, and then the next two to three weeks in terms of a variety of domestic issues, will deal a great deal with shaping his presidency as we go into the fall. So I would expect today there'll be an emphasis on American leadership, an emphasis on coming together to work on both the pandemic and also climate. And there may be other issues that he puts in. But I think the important thing is the tone of the address. Is it defensive or is it one where it's assertive in terms of American power? And certainly the stage that he's walking onto is not one that is as conducive to him as he would like. Yes, we are out of Afghanistan, but the withdrawal left a lot to be desired, and we still have fallout from the drone strike. And yes, we have issues with France, which I would argue are at two levels. One is purely financial in terms of the loss to the French economy of the billions of dollars when the submarines deal went south, and then also loss to the French prestige, especially since the other party involved is the is Great Britain. So you have all of this in a mix, and then you wonder what is Germany, you know, where does Germany fit into all this, and what does all this mean for our allies? It's certainly not the kind of setting that he would like to be into. On the other hand, I think it does give him a chance to issue a to deliver a speech which really emphasizes American values and what he feels needs to be done around the world. So a very important day for him.
You go back to last week, right? And you're at odds with the Parisian government. Biden with Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister, announcing plans to equip Australia with the nuclear-powered submarines. How much of a warning signal this initiative is meant for China, and to kind of repair a little bit there as to Australia over the Afghanistan withdrawal, and you upend a contract. It's around, what, $66 billion, I think I read, to sell these diesel-powered subs to Australia. A lot of outrage now, but how much of a warning signal to China in your estimation here?
Well, I think it's a major warning signal, and I think it also reflects Australian thinking. Remember, China's their leading economic partner in terms of trade, and they're prepared to say that the threat from China is such that they're going to try to counter it. I think it also reflects the U.S. concern about what happens in the oceans around China and the need for increased deterrent. So I think it's very significant. I think it has a possibility as the as people at the UN have indicated, of opening up or continuing and perhaps accelerating a Cold War between China and the U.S. And I think that's the last thing we need, and I think it's the last thing they need. But at the same time, this military aspects in terms of the disagreements in the South China Sea and so forth, I think are such that the president felt that this was a useful way of perhaps dealing with it. It's how it was done, I think, is the problem.
You know, you're looking at tough matters right now regarding international relations under this administration. You got the chaos, the confusion of the Afghan withdrawal. Lots of disagreements between our allied forces over rescue operations in Kabul, and the refusal by the president to really reach out to the Australian Prime Minister during the disaster. And of course, even accentuated more the admission Friday, David, that the drone strike on August the 29th, that was a Sunday, which targeted a car in Kabul believed to be carrying ISIS-K suicide bombers, in fact killing innocent civilians, children, who obviously represented no threat here to U.S. forces here. So, you know, there is a lot of repair here as far as how we are being looked upon. That'll be a fascinating aspect of this thing as far as the information that came out regarding that drone strike. You know, there is a, I don't even know what you call it anymore. Is it damage control at this point? I mean, how much egg can you have on one's face here if you're Joe Biden?
Well, I don't disagree, but I think when you look at the drone strike error, clearly faulty intelligence, clearly faulty decision-making, and that really sits right with the military. And I don't think you can put that squarely to the president. He will have to deal with it. And I think the important thing is how he uses, how he explains this and how he moves on. And I think that's going to be what he attempts to do. Now, whether or not he's successful or not remains to be seen. There are still a lot of questions to be answered. But, you know, it'd be one thing if this, if the president were only dealing with these international crises. He's dealing with a whole series of domestic crises and domestic things which actually could have a far greater impact on his presidency, and in conjunction with the two could really put the presidency at risk in terms of what he's able to accomplish. Again, we have a president who is, I think, I would not argue under siege, but I think a president who faces a variety of important decisions in the days and weeks ahead, and they're not just limited to the international stage.
Talking with David Caputo now, you know, okay, so let's put it on the Pentagon then. They said the strike was a successful mission to prevent another attack at the airport there in Afghanistan, Kabul's airport. And again, 13 U.S. service members killed, at least 169 Afghans killed by that ISIS suicide bomber, which was 3 days prior, it was on the 26th, right? So with that being said, then I bring in Mark Milley here, General Milley, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. You know, he went on to proclaim to reporters that the procedures were followed correctly, kind of paraphrasing, you know, always remember what he said, it was a righteous strike, right? And, you know, you kind of have a different viewpoint where you had General McKenzie, who's the head of U.S. Central Command. He gave kind of a different assessment of when he called the strike a mistake, offered sincere apologies, you know, didn't say any whether anyone would be held responsible for the catastrophe. But in essence, you know, you got two different viewpoints, and that brings me back to Milley and the phone call and everything else as far as to his counterpart in China. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, he said in essence, well, you know what, we'll let you know if we're going to attack you. Wasn't sure about the mindset of the former president. Became agitated in that sense, thus making that phone call. And that has been a very big topic in the last couple of weeks. Will we see a commission in play here? Will an interrogation of Mark Milley's actions be in play here, and will there be consequences? You know what? That has been a very hot topic. It's died out somewhat. What do you think of as far as Millie and ramifications from all of this stuff?
Well, I think Millie's tenure as the chair of the Joint Chiefs may be at risk at some point down the road for a variety of reasons, all of this. And I think I don't think there'll be a commission to look into the phone calls and so forth. I think there will be a continued congressional investigation. And clearly, this will come back up if the Republicans are successful in capturing the House or the Senate in 2022. But again, if you go back to the military operation, I think, in fairness to the military, they're operating under very limited intelligence, and perhaps they should have erred on the side of caution. But remember, we had a bomber who had already killed a variety of Americans. So they were very concerned about that. And the strike has been in doubt from the beginning, because within hours, Afghanis were saying, look, these were innocent people and children who were killed. These were not. So it's not as if this is a new revelation. But I think what the president is going to attempt to do is to apologize and move on from there. And I think that he's going to try to tie some of the international things to his domestic agenda. And I think one of the real problems that he faces is the debacle on the border with the Haitians right now in South Texas. And it appears as if they're getting control. But this is apparently surprised them a great deal in terms of the rapidity of the buildup of the migrants and then how to handle them. And at some point, Haiti's going to refuse the flights, I would think, and then what is he going to do? So it's a series of events, many of which are beyond the reach of the president, but which he ultimately is going to have to take the responsibility for. And it will be very interesting to see what happens. And then couple that with the pandemic and the fact that right now the U.S. is the leading country in the world in terms of a number of infections per day and so forth. So I think that the president certainly has a very full plate at this point.
You know, I've got a hard time with his White House. You know, what more information about the video do you need? You know, the Border Patrol agents aggressively confronting the Haitian migrants over there, 10,000 or so, many of them refugees, many of them Haitian refugees. You know, you look at this, the video and everything else, I mean, near that Del Rio International Bridge in Texas. The Department of Homeland Security had to move some 3,000 people to other processing facilities. That was yesterday. I have no confidence at all. I don't even know what he's doing in the job as far as Alejandro Mayorkas, the so-called Homeland Security Secretary. You know, he's telling us his agency is facilitating, what, 1 to 3 deportation flights to Haiti and other locations daily? Come on. I'm not buying that. Only refugees from Haiti who arrived in the United States before, I think it was July 29th, are eligible for temporary protected status. I mean, it is, and Mayorkas can't even recognize the fact that it's a crisis. He won't even say the word crisis. And by the way, was it the czar in charge, the vice president of the United States? I do believe. Where is she with all this?
Well,
I mean, it's a disaster on all fronts here, David.
Well, I wouldn't go quite so far as to say it's a disaster. I would say it is a series of decisions and indecisiveness that has not been helpful to the administration, and it reflects a broader issue of what exactly is the immigration policy and what's the immigration policy of the United States going forward. And they made it very clear the borders are closed. Borders are closed to the Haitians who are trying to get in. So, and then the problem is how you deal with humanitarian aspects of this and those views of the Border Patrol, I think, are particularly disturbing. And I think in the short run and the long run, may be the more devastating aspect of this in terms of what the administration has to deal with. So it'll be very important to see how this gets resolved. But again, I want to come back to what I think is the underlying point here. You have a president who's dealing with a variety of issues at various levels, international and domestic, and is his administration going to be able to be organized enough to figure out exactly what the policy is going to be? And when you get into discussions about, is the government going to shut down? Are we going to default? Those are very real and legitimate discussions right now. So unless they figure out a way to deal with those two issues, they're going to have a variety of political fallout also. So I think the key for the administration is to attempt to get control. It's difficult to attempt to get control of events that you really don't have the impact that you want. And I think the immigration issue in terms of the Haitians is one of them. But I also think the broader set of issues of trying to govern with such thin majorities makes it very difficult. I think the one thing, if I might just interject here, that the president's not the only national leader who apparently makes miscalculations. Certainly, Prime Minister Trudeau may have made a major miscalculation in calling the snap elections in Canada, given the results that apparently were done yesterday. So, very difficult times, I think, for the president. And I think the important thing is how he tries to stabilize the ship and what he's able to get done in the next week or two.
And listen, we'll see what happens. An interesting week in New York City, without question. You bring up Trudeau, and the snap election, general election, the results in where Trudeau has prevailed over the conservative there, the rival, Erin O'Toole. What does it mean? His Liberal Party will form Canada's next government. So I think Trudeau's side fell short of winning the Senate. I think it was 170 seats needed to form a majority government. I think that was the number, David.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The Liberals won about, what was it, 157?
157, 158. So they're going to be short. And the argument that O'Toole and others are making is that, look, we spent $600 million to have the election. And the only reason we had the election was for you to try to increase your power base. You didn't increase it, and it appears that Canada now is becoming quite divided on the whole issue of vaccines and also on Trudeau's leadership. Remember when he called these back in August, he was riding a crest, but that was before the new wave is sweeping across Canada at this point. So it was a very interesting. Remember, I believe this is his third set of national elections, and he has yet to win a majority of parliament. So it means his party is going to have to negotiate, and the party that most likely will join him will be a ultra-leftist party with very strong ties towards taxing the wealthy. So that's going to lead to increased divisiveness also.
No question. A lot of polarizing issues in Canada, folks. There's a vocal sector that's very angry over the way Trudeau is handling his business regarding protocols, on the COVID protocols. That's really what it is. So, you're looking at it, and he was telling people the outcome means what? Millions of Canadians have chosen a progressive plan. So, you know what? So there's a lot of instances of Trudeau very much like Gavin Newsom, the way he's gone about his business there. Very interesting aspect, recall, Trudeau, when it all said and done, guys like Newsom and Trudeau prevail. And, it's a very interesting aspect as far as our society is concerned in those parts of the world. Very interesting. Sir, always great having you. You know that. And we look
Thank
forward
you.
To the next time. Appreciate it all.
Yep. Take care, Jay.
Mm-hmm.